Hi, and welcome to the Namely Marley podcast. My name is Marley, and my guest today is Pilar Gerasimo, the founding editor of Experience Life magazine. She also serves as Lifetime Fitness's Vice President of Education. I spoke with Pilar recently about her unique and lovely name. Hi, Pilar. This is Marley.
Hi, Marley. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you.
I was so inspired to hear that you're also a fan of Gay Hendrix.
Yeah. Love Gay.
Yeah, it's so cool. My husband had that book, and then I found Gay just because I just liked his name.
So do you do an interview with him?
I'm thinking about contacting him to see if he'd be interested in an interview. It's an interesting name. I'm sure he's had some, he must have some thoughts about it.
Oh, I'm sure. No, he would be a really, he's a phenomenal human being, and I have had the pleasure of getting to know him really well, and both he and Katie are they're just amazing people. So you would love talking to him, and I think he probably would be happy to do it. He's a busy guy, but
yeah.
He really, as he says, he only does things that he wants to do now, and he has a wonderful philosophy about I think he calls it easy world, where, you know, he has plenty of time for all of the things that he wants to do, and he simply doesn't do things that he either feels that are, you know, he never will say, I don't have time. He will always just choose not to do it. And if there's something he really wants to do, it doesn't matter how busy he is, he'll do it happily.
But so, something he doesn't like to do, he doesn't do it?
Yeah, he simply just doesn't have room in his life, he says, for things that he does not want to do anymore. So the way he phrases it is, you know, almost exclusively positive. He says, how does he phrase it? He basically just says, I have plenty of time for all the things that I want to do, which is really kind of a cool perspective to have.
It is, and it does kind of, it feels freeing just to say those words.
It really is, and that's a big part of his, like, seems to me like his life philosophy is, and his reason for being here on the planet, I think, is so much about creating that reality and helping people experience that, you know,
yeah,
for themselves. And so, yeah, I'm a huge fan of his.
Well, my husband and I actually, we're reading that book together, the one on relationships.
Oh, Conscious Loving. Yeah.
Yes. So
that is a great book. Really good.
Yeah. And then in this interview, you quoted David Wilcox, and I'm a huge fan of his. So I think I found a kindred spirit.
That's great. I don't even remember what I quoted him on. Which one of his songs, probably.
It was some quote. I actually wrote it down because I liked it so much. It was, when you lay your dreams to rest, you can get what's second best, but it's hard to get enough.
Yes, that is a great quote.
Oh.
That's, I think that's, she rides I think it's called Eye of the Hurricane or something like that.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful album, in fact, and he has another great song on there that's about, actually did make its way into popular radio, that's about, it's called Leave It Like It Is.
And I love that song.
Do you love that song?
Yes.
I do too. Yeah,
he's
cool.
If you want to say that song, I love it.
Yeah, I do too. And that's another guy I got a chance to meet when I was out at Kripalu. It was the weirdest thing. I'd seen him in concert in Boston,
mm-hmm,
you know, 10 years prior, I think when that album had first come out or something. And then I was just like, oh my God, that guy, I'd love to see him play live because his guitar work is so tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just the oddest thing. I happened to be out at, not at Kripalu, I'm sorry, at Omega Institute in New York in the Berkshires. And I was just there teaching a thing, a weight loss workshop with Mark Hyman. And this guy came up to the stage while we were sort of doing do a welcome for everybody who arrives, and I was like, God, that guy looks an awful lot like Dave Wilcox. I mean, it was a small little thing, and then he, like, picked up his guitar, and I was just like, oh, my God. I was so excited, and it got even better, Marley, because the next day, my friend and colleague Christy and I were like standing out in the front of our little cabin porch on the campus, and I was like brushing my teeth and enjoying the beautiful sunshine, and here he comes like a troubadour, walking, playing his guitar while he's walking down the path, stops in front of our cabin, greets us, and he's like, "Would you like a song?" And we're like, "Yeah!" We got a performance for two of us on our porch from Dave Wilcox, which was like an unbelievable experience. But
wow.
It was,
did
really
you get to
fun
talk with him too?
Yeah, a little bit. We hung out with him for a while and sat on the grass, and just, it was so much fun. And he's just, again, another totally amazing, cool guy. It's so interesting how many people, you know, it's like everybody is a celebrity now, but everybody's just a person, you know, and you really start to understand the more so-called, you know, rich and famous people you meet, the more you realize it, they tend to be people just following their path and their bliss. And I just always love meeting people who are giving their best gifts and pursuing their passions, which it sounds like you are obviously doing. What a cool, and I have to, I didn't have time to read too deeply into your site, but I think it's so cool that you're doing this and that you have this fascination. It's just groovy.
Yeah. I did an interview with Helen Fisher. I don't know if you know who she is, but
yes, of course. Yes. Yeah.
And she mentioned something, how she's always been fascinated, mostly because she hated her name, Helen, but that she was, you know, fascinated by the topic of names in general, just because it's, she called it a window to who the person really is.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much truth to that. It's like, I listen to so many interviews. I like to listen to interviews, and nobody ever gets into somebody's name. And I think that's sometimes the most intriguing part about a person.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because, you know, usually somebody, you know, for example, I could talk to you and you could tell me all these wonderful accomplishments that you have. And then I could ask you about your name and it immediately takes you back to some childhood memory or some story that's much deeper about who you are, I think.
Yes.
So I love the topic of names. I talk to everybody about their names.
Yes, I know, and I'm like just filtering my mind right now for like people with, I know so many people with cool names.
I bet you do.
But yeah, I think that's true. And I think, you know, how people feel about their names and relate to their names is such a great window too, to their deepest, you know, values and preferences, likes and dislikes. And yeah, I think it's very groovy. So yeah, anyway, thank you for inviting me.
Well, wonderful. So we'll get to it. So tell me, I asked this question first because I've talked to some people who have changed their name throughout their life. So I want to ask you, what did your parents name you?
Yeah, so my parents named me Pilar Gerasimo. No middle name.
No middle name.
No. Then there's a story behind that.
Okay, that's what my next question is.
Yeah. So, well, my mother and father, so this would be the summer of about 1966. I was born in January of 1967. And my mom and dad were traveling in New Mexico. They were visiting some artist friends, Rennie and John Dupuy. I think John Dupuy became a painter of some note, and Rennie is a sculptor. And they were in New Mexico, staying in a town named Pilar, New Mexico, which was a kind of a dust bowl in some ways, but also a very beautiful place, kind of in between the Sangre de Cristo Mountains and the Rio Grande River. And my mom just fell in love with the whole environment, of the smells of the sagebrush and the beauty of this place, and just always remembered it. And as her pregnancy progressed and she was trying to get my father to agree on names, my dad was convinced, I was their second of three daughters, he was convinced he was going to have boys. He's a Greek by background, and he would only consider boys' names, because my sister, my oldest sister, Louisa, had been born a couple of years previously, and he's like, well, now I'm definitely going to have a son, or maybe two sons, I don't know. And my mom was like, well, that's great, and they'd come up with some boys' names, but she couldn't get him to consider girls' names, until finally, it was about Christmas, and she was very pregnant, and she went and lay down and took a little nap. And it kind of came to her, this vision of Pilar, New Mexico, and of really liking that name. And so she proposed to my father the name Maya Pilar. So Pilar is a middle name.
Yeah.
And my father said, well, I don't really care for the Maya part, but I like Pilar. Let's just go with that. And I guess some combination of my first name being Pilar, which was an unusual name, and my last name, Gerasimo, which is a Greek name, an unusual Greek name, they really couldn't come up, or didn't feel like middle name was, you know, maybe it was overkill. If they gave me a middle name, like, what would it be? And so my mom just said, well, when she gets old enough, she can decide for herself what her middle name is going to be. Interestingly, I did at some point decide I wanted a middle name briefly. I never took one formally, but and there's a little bit more to the story, which was that in sort of framing the name Pilar, my mom did a little bit of research, and part of her pitch to my dad was that it sort of sounded like pilaf, which is a rice dish that he liked.
food is always good.
Food is always a way to a man's heart, right? But I guess also there is the name Pilar is sort of, its background is a Spanish name, and it's often connected with Maria, or Maria del Pilar, which is a very common name, I guess, I think, in Mexico and Spain and other Spanish-speaking countries. The Lady of the Pillar is a name that was given to the Blessed Mary, the Blessed Virgin Mary. I guess it's connected to one of these spectacle-type appearances that somebody saw her, you know, I guess the legend is that in the early days of the church, which the Apostle James the Greater was, you know, evangelizing somewhere, and he wasn't doing very well until miraculously he saw, you know, an image of Mary committing him to Jerusalem or something. And he had this vision, and in the vision, the Virgin Mary was on top of a column or a pillar, and that kind of icon of Mary of the pillar became Maria del Pilar, which became a very common name. So there's a lot of people named Maria del Pilar, and Pilar is a very common middle name. Not as common as a first name, I guess, although in Spain I think there are a lot of them. But weirdly, when I decided to take a middle name, not knowing any of this as a 3 or 4 year old, I chose the name Thea Maria, which I don't know where I came up with that. For a brief period, that was my name. And then I kind of dropped it and never went any further. So now I have no middle name. Back to Pilar Gerasimo.
Well, maybe none is needed since Pilar has so much in it.
Yeah.
There's a lot to that.
Yeah, a lot of history in it. It's funny. I now know more Pilars, but growing up I didn't know any, and I knew more about the history of my name, though, than almost all of my friends, because my mom actually loves talking about how she came up with the name.
Well, and how wonderful that it has a story. It seems like I see a lot of people nowadays picking names for their kids just out of a book.
Yeah, I know, and I feel like I'm something of a walking souvenir for that trip for my mom. I just was talking to her about it this morning, because I told her I was going to be talking with you, and it was amazing to me, you know, how much sensual imagery she could come up with about this, you know, staying in this little cabin that was built on the Golden Mean in the middle of this, you know, incredible scenic natural environment, and the smell of the sage and the sunshine and the high desert air, and I'm like, geez. I really am a souvenir. This is wonderful that my name can bring all this back for you. So I'm very honored by the name, and I do like it.
I was going to say, you know, your name embodies so much for your parents, but then that can take you to those places as well.
Yeah.
Have you actually gone to that city?
I have. Not until quite recently. A couple of years ago, my sister and a girlfriend and I were visiting Santa Fe on a visioning retreat. Every year or so, we get away for a little while and just kind of dream up our next phase of our future. And we were in Santa Fe and driving to Taos, and I knew we'd end up going past Pilar. And sure enough, there it was, this tiny little sign by the road. And
did you take a picture next to it?
I did try, although I don't think the picture actually ended up turning out or getting produced or something, because I don't have the picture, but I have the image in my mind. Mm-hmm. And it really is a beautiful area and a very small kind of middle of nowhere place. But it's known for having a lot of healing energy, and I think that's really interesting because it has a sacred kind of quality to that place, I guess, for the native people. And then the fact that the Lady of the Pillar, Maria del Pilar, is also associated with healing miracles is really cool. And then, interestingly, my father's name, Gerasimo, which in the Greek is Gerasimos. It has an S on the end.
Okay.
Gerasimos is the patron saint on the island where my family originates from. He's the patron saint of the mentally afflicted. But he also was...
Your first name has healing and your second name has it.
yeah, actually, yes, right. He's a saint who heals the mentally afflicted, not someone who is mentally afflicted.
Relief.
So the healing is a good thing, and the mental affliction is something that is supposed to pass in the presence of the saint. But so, yeah, I kind of got a triple whammy, but I like that too, and I did go to Greece and get to visit a lot of the scenes of the Saint Gerasimo, and that was fun too.
So you saw your last name basically up.
Yeah.
You saw your name up there, or?
Yeah, the name Gerasimos is all over the island of Cephalonia, which is in the Ionian Sea. It's one of the bigger northern islands. It's this beautiful, beautiful place, very rocky and full of trees. But the patron saint, this Saint Gerasimos, so there's a temple there or a chapel, or multiple chapels, actually. And you see the name on street signs and placards all over the place, which is kind of fun.
That is very fun. I did a name interview with Laurie Fabiano, who she wrote a book called Elizabeth Street that was mentioned in the Oprah magazine.
Oh, neat.
And she had the same experience, because here Fabiano is not a very well-known name, but when she went back to Italy, she saw, you know, it was Casa Fabiano. I mean, everything had Fabiano on it. She said she felt like a star.
Yeah, I felt that same way. And I felt, I read a novel, Corelli's Mandolin, which became a feature film, I think, with Nicolas Cage a couple of years, well, maybe several years ago. But that takes place on the island of Kefalonia and mentions the Gerasimos, the, you know, the saint and the healings and all of that within the narrative. And that was really the first time I'd ever seen the name, you know, that way. But visiting there was amazing. And it's funny, now I see it more often. There are derivatives of Gerasimos is, I think this is Gerasimovich, I think, and I don't know. There are some other kind of iterations of the name in other cultures, but I think Gerasimos was shortened to Gerasimo when my father's parents came, you know, through Ellis Island. They shortened it a little bit, and he was originally named Gerasimos Gerasimos, the same first and last name with a different accent, but they shortened the name to Jerry to be kinder to him in his American school days.
Yeah, Jerry would be a little easier for people to say here, at least.
Yeah, I'm getting a double whammy of the patron saint of the mentally afflicted for your first and last name might be a little bit much.
I have this book that talks about the meaning of names, and I want to give a little bit of background because it's not some astrology like, you know, you were born in the sign of Jupiter. It's a little bit more about the psychology of sound. And how those sounds can impact you over time. So just by pronouncing your name to people, it creates a certain emotional response in that person and in some way has an effect on you.
Cool.
I really like this book. So the closest I could come to for your name was that he does it by consonants, which is P and L. And so Paul obviously is in this category, or Pauline, or Paulita, or Polly. There's a lot of different names he lists. But what he talks about mostly is the combination of the P and the L.
Hmm.
So I thought, if you don't mind, I would read a couple of these descriptions and see what you think.
I would love that. And the other thing that I'd love is to hear what the combination of consonants of L and R, like Lara and Laura, are, because the name, to me, has both of those qualities to it. But yes, absolutely. Okay. I'd love to hear that.
Okay, so he says that PL people are always up for a good gab session. They have endless fascination for how things work. And I'm just reading snips here. Their theories are more likely to be bantered over a glass of ale and a slice of pizza rather than a straight-laced intellectual type. They have a wide and varied circle of friends. They like to combine wit and wisdom. He calls them social chameleons who have a different hat for every occasion. They relish their status as someone you can't quite define. They're also happy to play the part of the insightful intellectual, the social facilitator, or the spiritual guru. Their career choices are made without regard to social status. They like to be a perpetual student, which I think I heard you say on your interview a few times.
Yes, very much. Mm-hmm.
And they long to be stimulated by the work that they do. He also talks about how they're easy to laughter and just it looks like a lot of fun to be around.
Yeah, that all sounds pretty accurate. Yeah.
So you want to look at LR too?
Yeah, let's. Just, I'm curious now.
Yeah. I've been really impressed with this book. It's had a lot of good information. LRs present an inquisitive and inviting facade to the world and seem to derive much of their energy from their interactions with other people. With their natural ability for being all things to all people, you could say that LRs are social chameleons. Oh, once again, same theme. But in their quest to synchronize themselves with the needs of others, LRs often lose touch with their own desires and have trouble staying motivated. This is why many LRs approach new experiences with initial excitement before losing interest and turning away. He says this, the letter L is, you know, about love, learning, laughter, and the romantic R is associated with a cheeky sexuality. That's how he combines those two letters. he says, let's see, their talent for creating alliances while avoiding making enemies enables them to achieve great heights in business, usually in the realm of people management, motivation, and sales. But there's a flightiness to them that prevents them from settling into their ideal careers until relatively late in life.
That's great. That's very interesting. Yeah.
Isn't it?
This sounds more like me in my early earlier life, that the loss of connection with my, I think I was talking about, getting connected with other people's want of them or the desires or something like that, and the flightiness for sure. I think that's diminished with age, but that's very interesting. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's cool.
Yeah. So you said you liked your name as a child, huh?
Well, I like my name now, and I think in some ways I liked it as a child. I think I liked it until I started going to school and realized that it was an unusual or a weird name. And I think part of, so my parents were kind of counterculture parents to begin with. My dad is a sociologist, anthropologist, and my mom now is kind of a back-to-the-land farmer and healer. But even back then, when she was having us as kids, my mom has a very, original way of approaching the world and a very creative kind of spirit. So I think when I went to school and started realizing everybody else was named, Mary and Jill and Jane, I remember Romper Room, they would have that thing where they look, the lady would look in the mirror and say, I see so-and-so and so-and-so, and my name was never there. Then I started to like it less, and I wanted to be named something different for a while. I asked my mom, if she'd entertain changing my name or just calling me something else for a while. She wasn't really going to do that. But I think, over the course of my childhood, a lot of people said, wow, that's a really pretty name, or I really like that name, or that's a very unusual name. And I think as I got through to my teens, I started getting more comfortable with it again and realizing that it's not a bad thing to have a more unusual name. And it's certainly not a boring name, and I didn't want to be boring. So. But in my adulthood, I have really liked the name. And I think part of it is learning a little bit more and caring a little bit more about what its significance is and was to my mom and my dad. And that it's just, I've kind of grown into the name, and now I think it's, I don't know what the heck else I could possibly call myself. I'm very connected to it now. So yeah, I love it now.
Do you have trouble with people mispronouncing it?
Yes, I do. And it's interesting. There's a lot of different pronunciations I'm happy with, or different ranges of the, some people call me kind of a, I say Pilar, which is sort of a little bit of an E sound at the beginning. Some people just say Pilar, which is fine. Some people say Pilar and just kind of run the P and L together, which is okay too. The one I don't like is when people call me Pilar and or Pilar. Or they somehow get the accent wrong, then it just feels like something that has gone terribly, terribly wrong. It's a harder sounding name, and it's icky. And who wants to be called P anything? It's just like, it doesn't appeal to me. So as long as the accent is on the second syllable, I'm good.
Do you correct people when they pronounce it?
It depends on the environment. If it's somebody I'm going to be knowing for a long period of time, or someone who I feel like, or if it's a public situation where I really want to not have people think my name is something it's not, I'll gently correct them. If it's somebody I'm meeting in social, just in passing, and it's going to be embarrassing for them, then I tend to just forget it, because no one's going to remember my name for the most part in that situation anyway.
Actually, that's a segue to the next question, which is, do you feel like your name has had any impact in your life?
Has it had impact in my life? Yes, I do. I think it has. In a number of ways, actually. I think one of the first things is that because I have an unusual name, I think people often will strike up a conversation with me about my name that gets an opportunity for me to know people a little bit better, even within a few minutes of meeting them. Mm-hmm. I think noticing that I have an unusual name, people sometimes assume that I have an unusual background. I mean, many people assume I have a Hispanic background, for example, and because my last name is kind of a weird, it's an anglicized version of a Greek name. A lot of people think it's an Italian name or some other ethnic, other than what it really is.
Yeah.
But many people say, where are you from? Or so I found it's actually opened a lot of conversations, and I think in some ways it's an accurate representation that there are lots of things about me and my background that are unusual. And so I think if I were named Mary, that would feel like a little bit of a falsehood. I feel like people draw good conclusions and appropriate conclusions, even if they're, initial sort of just senses about me based on my name.
Yeah. I think I read that you have a background in branding.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, do you see any connection between a person's name and their personal brand for themselves?
Sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything from, and that's, I think, why so many people choose to change their names, is they don't feel that the name brands them correctly. And the way people choose nicknames and things, you know, obviously is a big part of that, whether you prefer to be called, you know, Elizabeth or Liz or Lizzie or Peggy or, you know, whatever it is. For me, I think, like I said, it really is a fairly, if I had to, you know, if I had to sort of assess the brand quality of my name, I would say it's good, and it has, and my last name too, for that matter. I think, you know, when I got married, I considered briefly changing my name, and it was just laughable. My husband's name is a very normal name, Jacobson, and I tried out Pilar Jacobson, and it was just so wrong. It just sounded strange, and it was there was not good parity between those two names, and I got married later in life at about 41, I guess. I'm 43 now. And it just, I realized I have so much, I guess we all call it brand equity. I don't know. So much investment in my name. Now it would be very hard for me to imagine taking another one or changing it appreciably.
Yeah, I agree. I actually took on my husband's last name, but as a space, not a hyphenated name. So his last name is added on after mine, but I end up using only my maiden name.
That's neat. So when you introduce yourself, how do you introduce yourself?
It's Marley McMillan.
Marley McMillan. Okay.
Yeah. And cool. So my husband's last name is Bielman, and sometimes I use that and for like emails or things like that or something in print, but usually I just have Marley McMillan.
And you have his name after yours, then. But
yes,
you use
but it's not hyphenated, because that way that, you know, government-wise, by my legal documents, it's not necessarily required.
Right, right.
So
interesting.
I was happy about that.
That's cool. That's a very creative way of doing it.
I thought so. I thought it, but in the end, I probably would have just stuck with McMillan, because, for example, checking in early for a flight, forget it. I can't do anything online. They don't understand two last names.
No, it's just too much. I know my father said he had that kind of problem with the two Gerasimos. His birth certificate still had, I think, Gerasimos, even though everyone had always called him Jerry his whole life. And when he was in the Army, it was Jerry. But if a no middle initial combined with that, he also had no middle name. And he just has all these funny stories about, you know, some people insisting that he would say NMI in place of no middle initial when he was in the military, but other people thinking his middle name was NMI. All run together. And same thing, medical records, always a challenge. Sometimes it's Gerasimos, Gerasimos. Sometimes it's Jerry, Gerasimo. Sometimes the S is there or not. It's very complicated.
Yeah. Well, I was going to tell you, I fall into that category of people who I chose to change my name. So my mom actually named me Marilyn, and as I reached adulthood, it just didn't fit my life, so I changed it. And I really resonated with, again, I listened to this interview with you talking to Alexandra Jay.
Yeah.
And you talk about this, you're talking about women and how we're often overburdened by taking care of other people.
Yeah.
And how it requires a lot of courage. And so that for me is, changing my name was kind of like putting a stake in the ground saying, this is my life.
That's
and the
great.
Courage that it took to ask people to call me something different was really hard. But I see that now as kind of like a rite of passage I had to go through to reach
that's
this point
great.
Where now I'm living my own life.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. Yeah, and I mean, given, I think it makes a ton of sense why you'd be so interested in names.
Yeah.
Because you're right. I mean, I can see a name like Marilyn. Boy, that comes with an awful lot of baggage. It's a beautiful name, but it's attached to Marilyn Monroe, and it's a specific kind of very feminine name. And you have Mary and Lynn in there. And I can see, you know, if it doesn't suit you, boy, it really wouldn't suit you. And it's a lot to carry around. But I think that is any kind of self-definition is always an act of courage. Anytime you kind of say, I am this and not that, declarations like that are incredibly profound. So, wow, kudos to you for doing that. And it sounds like it's had a very significant and positive effect on your, you know, trajectory as a person.
It has. And I do think there's something to that. You know, a lot of people I talk to that tell me they hate their name. And I say, why don't you just change it? And they act as if, socially that would be so embarrassing. There's no way they could do that. And I think women change their name all the time for these external events that happen in their life called marriage.
Yes.
I don't understand why it's different to change your name because of your own accord.
No, and in some ways it seems like such a great coming-of-age thing to do, you know. I know some people change their names more than once, too. Mm-hmm. That, you know, they're just, I think there are people who are inclined to do that, and they are more chameleons. They are more, you know, they're people who tend to try on different personalities and different brands for themselves.
Yes.
But I think if you reach even adolescence not liking your name and thinking you want to change it, you know, like I said, my mom sort of left it open to me. Like, you know, if you want to change your middle name, go for it. And if I had reached adulthood and said, you know, Mom, sorry, I'm turning 18 and I'm no longer into this Pilar name. I really do want to be named Irene, which I think was my name of choice when I was about 4 for some weird reason.
Irene?
Yeah, Irene. We had a dog named Irini, which maybe has something to do with it. But, you know, I'm sure she would have blessed that choice. And I agree with you completely. It's like, if a name isn't making you comfortable, what a heavy burden to carry. And how great to free yourself of it and give yourself something that feels better.
Yeah, exactly. And I will tell you, that's one thing I love about your magazine, is it seems like it's full of inspirational stories of people living their best lives, I guess.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for seeing that, and very much what we want it to be. And I think it's a really exciting time right now, you know, where we are in our history as a society and as a planet and as a people. It's just a really great opportunity for us to all reflect on, you know, how are things going? What would our dream reality be, and what are the steps we can take now to start creating that in our present lives? And you know, the magazine, Experience Life magazine, is really, it started out as kind of a reaction to the current canon of health and fitness magazines and literature, which I felt were overwhelmingly superficial and status quo, and just so not honoring of the full potential of us as human beings and what health and fitness and wellness really mean in terms of our quality of life and our ability to give our best gifts. Mm-hmm. So that's been an amazing experience to sort of develop this publication and to hear that it's having that effect and people are recognizing that and seeing its intent reflected through its pages and those stories. I love connecting with people and hearing about, you know, what's worked for them in their lives and some of the challenges they struggle with and why. Mm-hmm. And I think it's incredibly inspiring to connect with real people's stories.
I agree. And I'm curious, how did you come up with the name Experience Life?
Interestingly, that was an inherited name, and I did consider changing the name. When I first came aboard, the magazine had existed in a previous incarnation. It really was a very different magazine, but the brand name Experience Life was owned by our parent company, our publishing company, which is Lifetime Fitness. Mm-hmm. And they had had a magazine, I think maybe 5 or 6 issues of the magazine had come out. It was kind of an experiment. It was a marketing project for the most part. It was a custom-published magazine. And, you know, a kind of combination of, like, schedules of like group fitness classes at our parent company. It is a health and fitness club company, but now it's a much broader healthy way of life company. But at the time, it was just this kind of like almost like a newsletter, you know, or like an in-flight sort of publication. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who originally gave it the name Experience Life. I had mixed feelings about it, and I actually wrote a little bit about it in one of the first issues. That initially I was like, you know, that's a tough thing to sell. It's tough to fit on a magazine cover. Mm-hmm. It felt a little treacly or a little like, I don't know, what does it mean? Is it an imperative where you're saying go out there and experience life, or is it a kind of life, like a life full of experience? Yeah. I just wasn't sure. But over the time, I initially looked at changing it. Everyone said there was no way we were going to change it. They had too much invested in it. That was, you know, after 6 issues. Now we've got like 100 out there. But at various intervals, we looked at changing it for practical reasons, mostly having to do with design. And that, you know, typically magazines with the word life in them, unless they were the original Life magazine, tend to fail. Something I found out in the industry. And so there were some kind of practical reasons we looked at changing it. But people, you know, over time, I guess we've grown accustomed to it. And I think it does communicate something important about the magazine, which is, first of all, it's a whole person, whole life health and fitness magazine. I wouldn't want to call it something like Healthy Living or Fitness Life or, you know, anything that just contained it too much.
Right.
And I think the other thing is that it really is about your personal experience. You know, one of our goals with the magazine is to help people achieve the healthy living goals that matter to them, rather than forcing onto them the goal of six-pack abs or 10 pounds of weight loss or fitting into the jeans or the bikini or whatever. We're really about saying, you know, this is about your experience, and our sort of position is you're going to have a better experience in your life if you're healthy and fit and able to be present for all of the cool experiences that you could have. Mm-hmm. But it's really up to you to decide how you want to go through your life and experience it daily. Some of that is physical in terms of nourishment and exercise. Some of that is a lot of it has to do with your mindset and your attitudes and belief systems. And so now, you know, I think that the title, although it still has all of the technical limitations it has and still confuses people, I think it translates in a good way to the kind of whole of what we're trying to do, which is help people experience life in a better, healthier, and happier way.
Yeah, that all comes through. In other words, it's kind of like your life story. The magazine has grown into its name.
Yeah. Well, thank you for thinking so, and that's a lovely way to say it. And we hope to continue to grow into it. You know, one of the things that we did just recently, which was a huge step for us, and, you know, along the lines of changing our name, we didn't change our name, but we kind of changed our look and feel after about, this is our 10th year of publication, and we realized we had never really redesigned the magazine, and we thought it was time to sort of freshen it up and also kind of have a coming out into the world as sort of our growing up party. And we as we took on a new sort of tagline or a new motto, I call it a mantra, which is being healthy is a revolutionary act. And so that runs underneath Experience Life on the cover of each magazine. And I think it's a really good reminder. For us, it's a coming into the fact that we are also kind of a revolutionary magazine, that I don't know of any other magazine, at least, you know, in quite the same way that delivers what we do, but that takes the perspective that we have. And also really, to me, it's very much a truth that in the current culture, which is an unhealthy culture predominantly, you know, it's many more people now are overweight than not. And chronic disease, one out of every two adult Americans is struggling with the chronic disease. Almost half of us are on prescription drugs at one time or another. Almost none of us eat, you know, as many vegetables as we ought to. Mm-hmm. Almost none of us get as much exercise as we should. So becoming a healthy person in a context of that much unhealthy pressure is a revolutionary act. It requires revolutionary choices. And it also changes the world around you in revolutionary ways. When you get healthy, it really does revolutionize your life and the life of other people around you, just as you're getting very sick will do in a negative way. So it's, you know, in some ways, I think that this next phase of our future, history to come, is a really exciting one, in part because we did kind of we did that reflection of, like, how do we feel about our name and our look and our feel and our mission, and how do we want to refine that for the next phase? And I think where we're landing is a great place, and I'm so glad to hear you say that it's coming through, because that's the whole point.
Yeah, that's right.
People read it and get it.
Many thanks to Pilar Gerasimo, founding editor of Experience Life magazine. You can learn more about Pilar on the Namely Marley site at namelymarley.com. That's it for today's podcast. This is Marley, and I thank you for joining me here today. Stay tuned for more fresh and fun name interviews in the future.